This is Bristol Bay and Beyond, KDLG's weekly news magazine. It's Friday, April 7th. I'm your host, Dave Benninger. We are glad to have you joining us this week. Coming up, the Togiak Traditional Council took extreme steps to deal with a suspected alcohol bootlegger.
Banishment out of the village, because we have to protect our elders, our young children, our future.
But the banished man, a non-tribal member, has retained an attorney, and Togiak may find itself soon facing a serious lawsuit.
They exercised jurisdiction over him. They put him in a jail. They duct taped his legs together. They dragged him to a plane. You know, they held him without any legal or valid charges for 6 days.
We'll unravel what we know about the case of Ron Ortwick and whether or not banishment is the right tool for village councils to consider using. Plus, we'll send our reporters out to find out what has kids pumped about chess and why some anglers are gung-ho for pre-spawn rainbows on the Naknek River.
They're beautiful, and they're big, and they're trophy rainbows that Alaska's known for and the Naknek is known for.
Those stories are coming up after a look back at some of this week's news. The state's Department of Natural Resources added another extension to the land use permit used by the Pebble Limited Partnership. Spokeswoman Elizabeth Blumink says the delay of roughly one more week was to allow staff more time to finalize a decision on Pebble's permit renewal request.
We received an estimated 2,000 comments on the application, so we've been reviewing those and reviewing the application itself, and we will issue a decision in approximately 1 week, and until that time, the extension will remain in place.
Many of the comments received have asked the state to put additional stipulations on Pebble's work northwest of Iliamna, including a possible bonding requirement to guarantee funds available for cleanup. A decision is expected today or Monday. The Nooshagak Peninsula caribou hunt wrapped up at the end of March. Andy Aderman from the Togiak Refuge was processing permits Monday and offered an update.
Right now for the federal permit hunt, we're at 266, and most of those were taken January up through the end of March. There were some in the fall, I think less than 60.
Poor winter travel conditions had blocked most hunting effort in 2015 and 16, but this past winter has provided a lot of opportunity for snow machiners. Federal managers increased the bag limit to 5 caribou of either sex and allowed hunters to hunt the same day they were airborne. Still, Aderman says managers were hoping to see 500 or more animals taken to help bring the oversized herd down to what the habitat can support. The spring migratory bird subsistence hunt opened April 2nd this year. Among the long list of species hunters can pursue, emperor geese are back available for legal harvest. Their population has recovered enough since the last legal hunting back in 1987. Togiak Refuge's Alan Miller hopes Bristol Bay hunters will still take it easy on them.
Because the numbers of emperors have just barely gotten back to a legally huntable level, we're encouraging people to be conservative in their thoughts on harvest and their methods of harvest especially.
Hunters are reminded to have a valid state duck stamp in their possession and that only steel shot is allowed during this hunt. A 4-year-old girl was killed tragically this week in Fairbanks when the snow on her roof slid off and buried her in an avalanche. 4-year-old Alexa Burreal was hospitalized after the incident but succumbed later to her injuries after being buried underneath 5 feet of snow. The man hired to serve as Unalaska's next fire chief was fired after charges were filed in Illinois that he sexually assaulted a man at his going-away party. Unalaska City Manager Dave Martinson says the news came as a surprise about David Dunn, who was supposed to begin his work this week.
Nothing had turned up in any kind of a background stuff that we do. We were all shocked. I found out by an email from a reporter out of Illinois.
The search for a new fire chief has taken the city more than a year. Dunn had experience working with Guardian out of Unalaska. Residents around Iliamna and Kakanak are recouping after a late season flu outbreak took a heavy toll. Dozens of children were absent from schools and 2 elders were hospitalized. Nurse Donna Feary took the occasion to remind people that flu is a serious illness.
Influenza is a serious infection and can make people quite ill and require hospitalization, and unfortunately some people die with flu-related complications. So it's a serious illness.
She encouraged people to still get a flu shot if they have not done so already. Dillingham police say there have been several incidents of funny money being passed around town. Chief Dan Pascarillo says they found several of the fake $100 bills after some teens attempted to use them.
These counterfeit $100 bills look fairly real, except instead of the United States of America, they say for motion picture use only on both the front and back. There's slight differences in the engraving. There's no dome on the Capitol building on the back of it, but at a quick glance, it would look real. And we've had three incidents, all of them involving juveniles.
Pascarillo says most of the fake bills have been seized, but warns residents to check any they are given, any $100 bills they are given, carefully. And the Bear Trail Lodge in King Salmon is now fully owned and operated by the couple who have run the lodge's guiding services since it opened in 1999. Last week, Nancy Morris Lyon and Heath Lyon made it official and bought their partners out. Morris Lyon says that opportunity for them to buy the lodge was an unexpected one.
We just had this really unique opportunity that we never imagined would happen at all in our lifetime. We had two partners in the lodge, and they had much larger financial means than we did. And we had the opportunity to buy them out. And there was a financier from back east, actually, of all places, that was looking for investments in Alaska. And we just ended up being in the right place at the right time. And so we are now full owners of Bear Trail Lodge.
She says the day-to-day operations will remain largely unchanged and that she and her husband are excited about bringing the lodge back into local ownership. You can find more on this week's news at our website, kdlg.org. You're listening to Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. I'm Dave Benninger. The village of Togiak has found itself in hot water this week after using its tribal court to banish a non-tribal member of the community for suspected alcohol bootlegging. The situation raised a number of very important thorny questions very quick, not the least of which was why the man was duct-taped and hauled out to a plane to Dillingham Monday. State authorities all the way up to the governor are aware of the situation, as are federal authorities, including the BIA and the FBI. The banished man is Ronald Ortwick, a 72-year-old. He's been living in Togiak for 3 decades and used to run the River Lodge for the Tribal Corporation. Lately, he has operated a bed and breakfast near the airport under a lease with the property owner. On Monday at the Grant Terminal in Dillingham, Ortwick did not want to tape an interview until he had spoken with his attorney. He was distraught, he was unsettled, and he left for Anchorage on the evening flight. David Henderson is Ortwick's attorney, who is investigating the situation with the intent of filing a civil lawsuit.
You know, the city of Togiak is a second-class city in the state of Alaska. Mr. Ortwick is a longtime resident of Togiak. He owns a business in Togiak. He runs a business. He has deep roots in that community. He is not a tribal member. You know, he's of German ancestry. And they exercise jurisdiction over him. They put him in a jail. They duct taped his legs together. They dragged him to a plane. You know, they held him without any legal or valid charges for 6 days.
Henderson has not filed suit yet. He's investigating who in the village was involved, but also looking into the state's potential liability for what he claims was failing to protect one of its citizens.
There's either rule of law or there isn't in the state of Alaska. And they were on notice, you know, before I got involved for Mr. Ortwick. He contacted them and said, what do I do? They said, we won't get involved. Then when Mr. Ortwick tried to go back home to where he lives, to his home, you know, he was arrested. And then the state was put on notice the next day again and asked to intervene and make sure, you know, we were told that he was being held unlawfully in a jail with no charges. He was a non-tribal member, and they ignored it. They did nothing.
The story broke in the Alaska Dispatch News Monday night, just as Ortwick flew back to Anchorage. By Tuesday, the village of Togiak was in damage control mode. By coincidence, that same day, the village was welcoming a delegation of top brass from the Alaska State Troopers, who were coming in to inspect the facilities to open a new trooper post in the village this summer. Tribal Council President Jimmy Kupchayak was putting the finishing touches on a press release about the banishment of Ron Ortwick.
He first came under the suspicion in January that he was selling alcohol and drugs. So we brought him into our tribal court from observations of our law enforcement officers.
A criminal complaint filed by Tribal Police Officer Leroy Nanaluk says that on January 24th, he was notified by the village public safety officer that a suspicious tote had just arrived on Everett's Air Cargo addressed to Ron Ortwick. Nanaluk wrote that he attempted to locate Ortwick to tell him his tote was being seized. Nanaluk says he obtained a tribal search warrant, and when Ortwick would not respond, he had two other tribal members witness as the tote was searched.
He had, like I just showed you, a tote full of 22 bottles of R&R and a stolen shotgun in his possession.
This was in late January. It wasn't until March 27th that Ortwick was brought to a community court, a combination of the tribal court and apparently a jury of tribal members who show up.
The community ruled him guilty for importation of alcohol because it's an Alaska statute and it's a felony. If you have more than 12, it's a felony under state law.
But Ortwick was never charged under state law, nor would a state prosecutor likely accept evidence collected under these haphazard methods contradicting every citizen's Fourth Amendment rights against improper search and seizure. Kupchaik says the tribal leadership was not concerned about the state criminal charge so much as seeking a more permanent punishment through the tribal court.
Banishment out of the village, because we have to protect our elders, our young children, our future.
The banishment order was handed down on March 27th. Anisha Kritz is one of Togiak Traditional Council's five tribal court judges and one of three who presided over this case. She says Ortwick was one of 19 suspected drug or alcohol importers who were warned by the court in January that they were at risk of being banished.
When we warned him, we told him that tribal court will not take this case, but the community court will. You know, so it was the community's wishes that he was found guilty from the community, and their wishes were to banish.
The court order blends together tribal code and state statute as it describes the case against Ortwick. The first order is signed by five tribal court judges, but says the community members issued the verdict and the banishment order. On the 27th, the day it was handed down, Ortwick got on a plane to Dillingham, willingly, according to the tribe. Then he turned around that same day and flew back to Twin Hills and took an ATV back to Togiak the same night. That ignited a fury in the village.
He came back through Twin Hills, and then someone brought him over here. And the other thing that the community didn't like was he had two pistols in his tote, and they were both loaded.
Back in Togiak, Ortwick was detained, by one account for trespassing in violation of the banishment, and another account for his own safety and that of others. Who arrested him at this point is unclear. He was hauled in for a second court hearing on the 29th and banished once again by the community court, with three judges signing off. For Anisha Kritz, there is no question that the Togiak Traditional Council was operating within its legal jurisdiction.
Yes, I very much believe that. Tribe has the sovereignty, and we have the power both with written laws and unwritten laws. And we've told them already, if you want to be the residents of Togiak, you abide by our laws. There's both tribal laws and state laws.
From March 29th till Monday, April 3rd, the tribe says they could not find air transportation for Ortwick to leave Togiak. One carrier did not want to be involved, and another was not flying due to weather. His lawyer says this was a mistake, detaining a 72-year-old diabetic for several days on what may be bogus charges. When he was taken to the airport, Kupchaik says tribal authorities used packing tape to keep him subdued.
He was resisting because it's already been court that he was banished, and he didn't want to leave. It isn't our first choice, but it was a drastic action that we had to do. To protect him, we had to do something.
Where were state authorities in all this? The Togiak tribe is frustrated that the state did not take the bootlegging case originally, nor did they respond when the banished suspect returned to the village. Ortwick's lawyer will argue that the state should have responded to free the man from false imprisonment. The situation went immediately up the chains of command of both the Department of Law and Department of Public Safety, and Governor Bill Walker was made aware. Walker dispatched his rural affairs advisor, Jared Godfrey, to Togiak Tuesday to get to the bottom of the situation.
The governor's office wants to empower tribes to serve their community most effectively whenever and wherever possible, including through tribal courts. And one of the things the governor's office wants to do is make sure that tribes are exercising their authority within the boundaries of that authority to protect themselves as well as citizens who come in front of the tribes and the tribal courts.
Make no bones about it, the state is as concerned about its potential civil liability as the tribe is or should be. That is why state authorities stayed out of this incident as well as several other recent ones as much as possible. Walker and Byron Malott have been encouraging tribes to exercise their sovereignty and find ways to police their own, but have not provided effective guidance or oversight as Togiak has attempted to do so. Godfrey acknowledges this incident quickly raised a lot of concern.
Whenever anybody is charged with any level of crime, when they're a citizen of Alaska, a citizen of the United States, they're entitled to due process, and that's a constitutional right. And so due process, their civil rights are something that have to be respected and acknowledged throughout the entire justice system.
Other recent incidents have drawn attention. In Togiak in February, two women suspected of importing heroin to the village were detained and searched per a tribal court order. According to village officials, one of the women was searched by two female judges, one who performed a body cavity search while the other held the woman down. Resisting the intrusive search, the woman bit one of the judges. They turned up a shocking 115 grams of black tar heroin, but the state quickly dismissed the drug case, as well as the added assault charge for the biting. Whether that was due to an unlawful search and seizure or what could arguably have been a sexual assault, the state did not say. In another case, a longtime Manicotic resident named William Delgado was banished in early January. Delgado, a Cuban-American originally from Florida, says he had never been made aware of any charge against him, nor had he attended any hearing or had any chance to defend himself.
I was in my house and I hear a knock. And when I open the door, he just goes like this. And I said, what is this? He goes, you got to move right now. Get whatever you can get and get in the van and get out of Manicotic right now. I've been living there for 15 years. I got here spring 2002. I'm talking about spring 2002. That's how long I've been watching and what's going on in that village.
For those 15 years, he was together with Manicotic resident Agnes Sabalo. By his account, the two of them had domestic disputes at times, none of which attracted the attention of law enforcement, but she was someone Delgado says he cared for deeply.
More than that, man, I have her tattooed face right here. Okay. I loved her. I loved her more than I loved any other woman, but the alcohol killed my love for her.
In a letter provided to Delgado, the Manicotic Tribal Council members say they had received a call from a family member alleging his abuse, that this was in violation of tribal code, and that they had elected to banish him. They bought him a ticket to Florida and wrote in the letter that his property would be mailed to him.
They only listened to her side of the story. Nobody in Manicotic came to me and talked to me like a normal human being. No, they just kicked me out of there like if I was some kind of criminal, man, and I never done nothing there.
However, Delgado did have a criminal record from Florida, including old felony convictions involving theft and drugs. At the same time he was being banished, troopers were in the village to investigate another domestic violence incident. The tribe brought the troopers to Delgado's house and asked that he be arrested for being a felon in possession of firearms. Hauled into court the next day, the state's prosecutor Pamela Dale offered Delgado a deal. Plead on a reduced weapons charge and use that plane ticket to leave the state as the tribe had requested.
My offer is he pled guilty to the misdemeanor and the penalty would be forfeiture of all evidence seized and that he gets on that plane and goes to Miami. I don't know if you can actually enforce that, but that's what our intent is that he leave.
He took the deal. He asked that all of his firearms be donated to the state troopers. Forced out of his home in the past 15 years, leaving it all behind, Delgado said he didn't know what was next.
Oh, man. I really don't know. I really don't know, sir. It's all in God's hands. That's all I can say.
What are you going to miss about this place?
Oh, man, everything. Everything that's good. The lakes. The geese. It's a lot. It's too much to say in words.
The Manicotic Tribal Council refused numerous requests for comment on that case, including why the alleged domestic violence was not reported to state troopers to press criminal charges. The village of Togiak has banished several other people over the past year, including at least two Alaska Natives who are not Togiak tribal members. Jimmy Kupchayak and Anisha Kritz say they don't have other options to keep the alcohol and drugs out of their community.
We are losing a generation of kids, and it is affecting our teenagers. It's affecting our school and our community. And this has to stop.
We have to take action. When we start our court, we always tell them that we're doing this because we care for you, because we love you. It's not for you to hate, but you probably will. It may be depressing like this. Ron, if he wanted to live here, it's something that we can't ignore, especially with non-tribal members.
But is banishing a legal and legitimate means to oust non-tribal or even tribal members from an area? The governor's representative, dispatched to Togiak Tuesday, Jared Godfrey, steered clear of committing an answer to that.
Do you believe that the right to banish tribal and or non-tribal members exists?
I'm going to refrain from answering that.
Do you think it's a settled question?
I'm going to refrain from answering that as well.
Ortwick's attorney David Henderson says they're still investigating and have not filed suit yet, but that they intend to do so. This is Bristol Bay and Beyond. Back in a moment. Thanks for staying with us this week. It's nicknamed the Game of Kings, and scholars date its origins back to ancient empires in India. Some Dillingham Elementary School students find it a fun way to while away a Wednesday afternoon. KDLG's Lawrence Hamilton stopped by Chess Club to see how their mastery of the art of the checkmate is coming along.
That's a nice move. I like how it's protected by the knight. It kind of gets in the way, right? So now it's up to Levi.
That was the sound of Dillingham Elementary School students getting instructions on the ancient art of strategy that dates back 1,500 years. The April showers that keep much of Bristol Bay indoors provides ample opportunity for participants in the Dillingham School Chess Club to practice their bishop opening or the queen's gambit. And for those who may be new to the king's game, the club can help you line up your knight or your bishop correctly.
No, you're setting him up wrong. White on right. You have to set him up this way.
That was Tim Sands, longtime coordinator of the Dillingham School Chess Club, which meets Wednesday afternoons in the Dillingham Elementary School Library.
But I like chess. I think it's a really good thing for kids. And so I bought all this equipment and have been doing this for, 15 plus years.
Benjamin Franklin, in his article, The Morals of Chess, said that by playing at chess, we learn foresight, circumspection, and caution. Sands couldn't agree more.
Kids like games.
Yeah.
It's a game. It's a thinking game. And I think it's, studies definitely show that chess really helps kids with math ability and linear thinking, things like that, that are good skills in life, problem solving.
Along with purchasing all the equipment for the club, Sands has gotten it registered with the chess federations, which means it can compete in tournaments. All this comes from his own love of the game.
I'm not great by any stretch of the imagination, but I like the game and I like sharing it with other kids. So.
Dillingham Elementary Social Skills and RTI coordinator Nick Tweed has been helping out with the club for a few years. While Tim Sands was on vacation, he took over as full-time coordinator. Tweed said there are some growing pains when learning the strategies of the game.
You know, it's hard for them to see more than one move ahead, I would say. You know, it's hard for them to anticipate. And they also will have an idea in their head of what they want to do, and they won't pay enough attention to what their opponent's doing.
Tweed also thinks the game is very beneficial for young people's minds.
Yeah, I mean, we feel pretty strongly that chess is good for kids. It's good for their brains. It's problem solving. It's responding to what your opponent does. It's paying attention. We feel like it's just the right thing for elementary kids.
All right, enough of the adults. What do the kids actually playing think?
Do you guys like playing chess?
Yeah.
Why?
Because you get to use all kinds of weird strategies. My favorite piece is the castle, because they can nearly capture anything.
I like it.
But why?
I don't know. Strategy, mostly.
What's your favorite chess piece?
Queen.
Why?
Just because it's powerful.
Yeah, it's really powerful and it can go anywhere, and most people value it a lot.
On the day I visited, there was about 15 elementary school students playing and a few middle school students. While San says most middle school and high school students get busy with sports, he encourages anyone who is interested to come by and have a game. In Dillingham, I'm Lawrence Hamilton.
For a few intrepid anglers, the Bristol Bay sport fishing season has begun. Rainbow trout are heading down from the Naknek Lake into the river to spawn, and a handful of fishermen from around Alaska are taking advantage of this short fishery. KDLG's Avery Lill spent Tuesday on the river with them this week to bring us back this story.
Just back it up to farther on the way, yeah.
Heath Lyon, co-owner of the Bear Trail Lodge in King Salmon, directs the launch of a John boat off the ice shelf that lines the Naknek River. The ice covering the river broke up in late March, just in time to get in some trout fishing before the river's spawning grounds are closed to fishing April 9th. The bow of the boat rises into the air. Ropes tie it to a truck that's backing slowly toward the river. As its stern touches open water, the boat stands at a 45-degree angle to the ice shelf. The fishermen ease it off the 18-inch ice ledge, and it enters the water gently, with barely a splash.
Okay, fun part. How do we get in the boat?
Space is limited as the Bear Trail Lodge takes 4 to 6 guests a day on the river for a fishery that lasts about 10 to 14 days. To give people more of a chance, the lodge limits trips to 3 or 4 days. Nancy Morris Lyon, Heath's wife, and the other owner of the Bear Trail Lodge says that once anglers get a shot at this trip, they usually rebook their dates right away for the next year. It's been 5 years since they've had any turnover.
This fishery gives people the opportunity to fish over pre-spawn rainbows that are migrating out of Naknek Lake down into Naknek River to spawn. And the only rainbow trout in these waters of Alaska that spawn are very, very large.
Mark Huber is a retired corporate finance professional from Anchorage. He's fished for spring rainbow trout with the Lyons for more than a decade. It's the prized trout lurking beneath the surface that often top 30 inches that keep him coming back.
Oh, because they're beautiful, and they're big, and they're trophy rainbows that Alaska's known for and the Naknek is known for. There's nothing like them in the world.
The five fishermen split between 3 boats,
see you guys later,
each with a guide. They have a long day in front of them.
So you'll fish down through a run on the river, and it could be anywhere from, 20 minutes to 2 hours, 3 hours in some of the bigger runs, the flats and the bigger parts of the river up there. And then we'll finish through that and then jump back in the boat and go to another location. And we may fish 3 or 4 or 5 different spots in the river over the course of a day.
Heath Lyon is guiding Young So, a painter living in Anchorage who's happy to be photographed but not interviewed throughout the day. The Naknek is low and skinny, walled in on both sides by ice shelves, evidence that just a few weeks ago, it was completely iced over. So sits in the front of the boat. Lyon navigates the boulders, and after 10 minutes, he kills the motor. He and So hop out. As they wade the river, the water rises up past their knees.
Go ahead and keep moving. We might come do it a second, but I want to get this spot, the corner, and then George's hole.
So moves into deeper water, and with smooth motions, casts his line far ahead of him. It sweeps down with the current. Chunks of ice float by as he waits. So slowly walks downriver, recasting every now and then. 20 minutes go by before his rod begins to bend. Lyon scoops up the rainbow trout, gently in a net, and they measure it. Coming in at 27 inches, this one's not the fish So is after. He's aiming for one over 30 inches. Over the course of the day, over 3 different fishing spots, So catches upwards of a dozen trout. But it isn't until 5:30 that he gets his big break. a 32-incher.
Yeah, no, that's the next level, right? The weight of it is just so much more.
Lion takes So's picture to put on the wall with the other guests who have caught trophy-sized fish this year. This one, like all the rest, slips back into the current. The day goes long. The party takes advantage of the late sunset and stays out on the water until about 9 p.m. When they reconvene, Mark Huber didn't catch the biggest fish of the day, but he's happy with the ones he did land.
They're just those gorgeous fish. I call them prom dates. You catch them and you admire them and then you let them go. Yeah, they're hard to come by like prom dates are too. Yeah, but it was quite a day to be on the river.
Soon, thousands of anglers from around the world will descend on this and 100 other nearby rivers. But on this day, the group from Bear Trail Lodge and a handful of local guides are the only ones fishing the Naknek, along with the bald eagles and the mergansers. In King Salmon, I'm Avery Lill.
Got up at dawn just to be out on the water. The weatherman said hot and getting hotter, but he didn't say nothing about it raining like hell. All with a bad day of fishing beats a good day of anything else.
That's it for this week's show. You can find this and past episodes of Bristol Bay and Beyond at our website, kdlg.org. We appreciate your feedback, story ideas, poems, essays, song, photos, all of it. Dave at kdlg.org is the email to use. My thanks to Avery Lill and Lawrence Hamilton for their help this week. I'm Dave Benninger. We hope to see you back here next Friday.
We should probably go to work, I mean everybody does. Instead of sitting out here in the middle of nowhere, working on a pretty good bus. Didn't get a damn thing, as you could say we took a licking. Tonight's fish fry's gonna taste like chicken, but we did just fine, if I do say so myself.